All right, so we're going to go ahead and pick back up where we left off before lunch. Our next speaker is Matt Yost from Utah State University, and he's going to be talking about Miss Campus productivity and nutrient export on 22 producer fields.
Thanks, Jason. So Miss Campus has garnered a lot of interest for use on marginal or degraded lands as a biofuel, but also a fiber crop. In Missouri and Arkansas, there's about 20,000 acres of miscanthus, and this offers kind of a unique opportunity to have a kind of a large field laboratory to look at how miscanthus performs across the landscape in a production commercial setting. It's quite rare. I think this is probably one of the largest plantings in the U.S. and maybe one of the largest in the world. So we took the opportunity to examine miscanthus on some of these production fields because we're really lacking some key agronomic information for miscanthus because it's a non-native crop to the Midwest and to the United States. So today I want to try to answer five questions, kind of share what we've learned about these questions. And these five are, first, how does management and environment influence miscanthus growth? Second, how does it influence miscanthus nutrition and nutrient export? Related to that, where could miscanthus be targeted on the landscape to bolster or enhance growth? Fourth, related to that, where could we target miscanthus to reduce nutrient export? And then fifth, how does miscanthus influence wildlife diversity and quantity of wildlife? Something we don't really have a lot of information on. So to begin, I want to tell you a little bit about the miscanthus production in this region, and then how we set up trials and what we monitored and how we did that. So in 2012, the federal government had a program called the Biomass Crop Assistance Program, BCAP was its abbreviation. And through that program, miscanthus was established on many of these acres that I mentioned. And it was established through a local cooperative, the Midwest Farmers Association. MFA had created a new part of their business. It was MFA Oil Biomass. And so they went out and they established miscanthus on lots of land. And a lot of it was marginal, degraded land. Some of it was in pasture, long-term pasture. Some was in long-term crops. And some of the fields were long-term pastures that had recently been converted to crop production. So it really gave us a wide diversity of conditions to pick from, weather conditions, soil conditions, different landscapes, different landscape positions. So just an excellent place to see how miscanthus performs. So this program started around 2012, and so that's when the majority of the miscanthus was planted. As I mentioned, it was planted by this company, so they went in and they did all of the operations. They tilled all of these fields before they planted the miscanthus. They used the Illinois clone cultivar, and they planted at about 16 to 23,000 rhizomes per hectare in about 0.76 centimeter rows to a depth about 10 centimeters. And this varied some depending on the conditions of the field, how much residue was present when they planted. You know that in 2012 we experienced a large widespread drought. Because of that, many of the fields did not make it and had to be replanted. So a lot of fields were replanted that next year. Some of those stands didn't make it as well, and a few were then planted again in 2014. This was actually pretty good for us because it gave us a good mixture of stand ages. So we measured yield and nutrient export in 2014 and 15 on 22 fields, and we got a range or a diversity of stand ages in each of those years because some of them had to be replanted. So to answer that first question, how does environment and management influence miscanthus growth? So what we did is we had these monitoring plots, usually three or four plots on different landscape positions in each of these fields. And we took the yield information for those 2 years, 14 and 15, and we took all of the factors that we could come up with, factors about the management of the miscanthus, the age, the soil conditions, the landscape position, the weather conditions, and we used all of those in multiple regressions to see which factors explained the most variation in growth and nutrient export. And so we used lasso regression, and I tried to come up, multiple regressions are kind of hard to visualize and understand. So what we tried to do is, and what I'm showing here, is this is the slope of several different factors. And I'm just showing the proportion of those slopes so you can kind of get an idea of how much each of these factors influence growth. So I didn't specify all the factors, and I'll talk a little bit more about them. But I tried to group them into these different categories or colors. So the first one is management. That's previous crop and some other things. The green is the stand age, 2, 3, or 4 years old. Landscape position, there were 5 landscape positions. Several soil factors, and I'll talk a little bit more about those. And then for weather, we had cumulative precipitation and then growing degree days as factors. So I want to point out here first that weather conditions really had kind of minor impacts on miscanthus yield. They did have some influence on the density, the shoot density of the miscanthus, and quite a big influence on the moisture of the harvested miscanthus, which makes sense. But it's really a positive sign, and I think a few others have kind of hinted at this, that the miscanthus yield was not very influenced at all by the weather conditions. So when we think about weather variability going into the future, climate change, things like that, I think miscanthus is well equipped to be quite resilient to different weather conditions. All miscanthus yield and shoot density were quite influenced by soil, more so than weather. And landscape position had quite an influence on the density and the yield of the biomass. So the related question, how do these factors influence the nutrition of the miscanthus? These models for concentration, so we looked at concentration and we also looked at nutrient export or removal, which is the concentration multiplied by the yield. And you can see that different factors influenced the concentration compared to the export once you added yield. So for concentration, the age of the miscanthus was quite influential for some of the major nutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Management was also quite important for phosphorus concentration. And then soil was kind of overwhelmingly important for calcium and magnesium concentrations. Again, when you move to exports, then I think yield kind of overwhelms the concentration data, and so that some of the trends that you see in nutrient export look very much like what you would see with biomass yield. Weather conditions did have quite an impact on nitrogen and potassium concentrations, but not much influence on the other nutrient concentrations or on the export of nearly any of the nutrients. So the third question, and an important one, as we think about trying to target miscanthus on the landscape, We need to know where to put it. Where will it grow best? And so, first, we looked at two things. So we looked at how quickly does it establish. So what's the yield increase from year to year, looking from the second to the third year, and then also from the third to the fourth year. The factors that came out probably most important, had the largest influence on the establishment rate, were that it was greatest when we were not on luff soils, we were on alluvium or colluvium soils. It also established quicker on less capable soils with a lower land capability class rating from the NRCS. I think that's quite important, that even on these less capable soils, it can establish quite quickly. It also established quicker on medium and fine textured soils, well-drained soils, and those that had more precipitation and less growing degree days. Where was yield the greatest? It was greatest when it followed pastures that had recently been converted to crops. It was also greatest when it was grown on north-facing backslopes or on foot slopes, again on colluvium soils, and again on medium or fine textured soils. It was also greatest on well-drained soils that had high runoff or low soil water storage. Miscanthus really did not do well in wet conditions. It did not like wet soil conditions. The nutrient removal. So if the intent is to grow miscanthus where you're going to and have a feedstock that has low nutrient levels, then following a pasture or crops on a depositional areas, alluvium soils or poorly drained soils would be ideal candidates to really reduce the amount of nutrients that are in a feedstock. And last, does miscanthus influence the diversity or the abundance, the quantity of wildlife? So we surveyed the 22 growers that participated in this research, and nearly all of them, or the majority of them, indicated that they had increased wildlife. And much of that was deer, rabbit, turkeys. About a third of them also indicated that they noticed new wildlife in their field and in surrounding fields near the miscanthus. So in conclusion, results indicated that miscanthus does quite well, and it does quite well on these degraded soils that are less capable, and that it's not very influenced by weather conditions. Soil had a big impact. The previous cropping history also had a large impact, but there's really, I think, really a lot of opportunity to produce it commercially and to have it do well in a lot of conditions. So with that, I'll say thanks and take questions. Yes.
I was just curious on when you said that they tended to do better, or it did better, on land that had been in pastures that had then been converted to cropland.
Yes.
You only had 22 sites, but what was the range in time out of pasture before coming back into Miscanthus?
So it wasn't very long. So we were only able to get about a 5-year crop history of the fields. Some of them we knew that they were long-term pasture. I mean, they'd been there for 25, 30 years. So what we had was that 5 years before miscanthus was planted. And so if it was converted to crops, it was sometime within that 5 years. So 2, 3, 4 years before miscanthus. Yes?
Do you feel comfortable that you had a lot of variability in the weather between your years and between your locations?
I didn't.
The fact that it didn't influence yield much, that would have surprised me based on some of the data that
you've seen. Yeah, so I didn't include it. I do have figures that show the weather conditions, and we did have a range. But yes, it's geographically we didn't cover a large area. It was confined to that region in Missouri and Arkansas. I think if you got outside that and start going farther north, where you have kind of more extreme differences in climate, I think you would see it. But I think we can confidently say that for this region, I think we got a pretty good sample of weather conditions. Yeah. And it's hard because that was our establishment year, and so a drought may have had an influence. But we do have other plot research there in Colombia, and drought conditions really didn't have a big impact on. We have switchgrass and miscanthus. They still did quite well, and even in the drought year, our switchgrass yielded better than some other years, just because of the heat. It really likes the heat.
Yeah. When you were showing the standard effect on nitrogen concentration, could you comment on the direction of that? That has increased the older you have more concentration or less concentration?
I forgot a pointer here. So this is the nitrogen concentration, and the stand age should be 5, 6, and 7. So it was the younger stands, a 2-year stand, had a higher nitrogen concentration, but then a 4-year stand had a lower. So I think it's kind of decreasing some with age. So.
All right, thanks again.